The specialists are back, Tegwith and Phil. And you might say, what is happening? What's going on here? We're actually surviving the fandom. And I'm really excited about this surviving the fandom because we're talking to the man who started this whole thing here, the specialists. And Phil, you know, you're the person that I feel like I was most interested to talk to about, you know, your fandom and Survivor, because, you know, I'm on a podcast network that is because you started it. So first things first, I think I would love to know, and I think everyone, they probably already know, but, you know, talk to me about, you know, you and early Survivor. How did you get started watching the show, and what persists to this day for the reason why you come back?
First, I have to say it's weird being the guest. That is weird. And second, though, I listened to Alexa's and I was like, now I got to go in and like say what people really want to hear. You know, Alexa was so positive and nice, and Phil was so nice and kind. And I'm like, Alexa, tell the people how I really am. But no, I mean, Survivor for me was crazy. I mean, it's always been an obsession. And that's why I always try to say whenever I do these podcasts is like, whenever we critique, whenever we're negative, is because we want the show to be the best version it can be. Because the first time I ever watched, so I was 8 years old when it first aired, and I didn't see season one right away. And season two, my grandma used to work at Macy's. And so, you know, whenever we got to go into Macy's, it was like, woohoo, we're going to see grandma. That's exciting. And so we went into Macy's, and my mom and grandma were talking about Macy's, or talking at Macy's about Survivor. And they were saying like, oh, why didn't they vote out that old guy? It should have been the old guy. Why didn't they vote him out? They must really like him. And I remember this conversation so vividly. I was like 9 years old. I don't know why I remember this so vividly, but I really do. And I remember being like, what is that? And my mom was like, oh, it's the show Survivor. Maybe we try to watch it. And literally the first episode I ever watched with my family was season two, episode two, when Kel gets voted out. And I was hooked. Like, we never missed a Wednesday. It was the punishment for me as a child. Like, the punishment for me as a child was you don't get to watch Survivor. Like, if you were a bad kid today, you miss Survivor and that's your problem. And like this was a big deal back then, because for everybody who's a kid now or grew up in the, you know, 2000s, and you were like really small in the 2000s and you're in the 20 teens, you had just like DVR or you had these streaming services. Like, we had nothing. We had VHSs, and it would be, well, we don't want to tape over the Seinfeld rerun from last night. So unfortunately you're just not gonna be able to watch this. So that was really how it started for me. And I just loved it. I loved the adventure of it all. I loved the excitement of it. I liked the strategy part of it. Like, I was always an athlete growing up. And like, when I say athlete, it's like, I played every sport you could play. Like, that was my whole thing growing up, is I just liked playing sports. So I liked the physical part of it, but then I also liked the strategic sense. So that's always what persisted for me. And I like games, and I don't know, it was just something that I obsessed with. And then the reason why the podcast really started was because on YouTube, there was a way to rewatch older seasons. You would type in $ number of the season, E number of the episode, and then P for part whatever. Because it was back when YouTube would only do like 10-minute videos. And so you could find every season of, is that my internet? You could find every season of Survivor going that way.
Huh.
So it was pretty incredible. And so that's how I went back and rewatched seasons 2 through 16, because I really started like, cause I really didn't remember them all that well. And that's how I got like obsessed with all the older seasons and everything like that. So yeah, that's really how it all went for me.
And when did you start the specialists? I know it was in the 30s, but what was the season that you said, okay, I can't just talk about this in my day-to-day life. I need to take this on the internet and talk about my thoughts. Hold on, Phil. I lost your sound.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you're back.
What a disaster. What's happened? This is what happens when you interview me.
The specialist, what is this called? StreamYard said, not today.
Nobody ever said that my internet was going to be better. I mean, we just recorded a bunch of stuff before this, and now all of a sudden it's gone. No. So for me, my friend had a website that was called Streamline Cinema, which I don't think you can find anymore because I think he took it down, but it's the guy who made our logos and everything. And he has his own business now. And so he was like, we're trying to do articles. And I was like, well, have you ever done a podcast on there? And like, Rob had done his podcast, and this was during season 29. So the first episode I ever did was for his website with one of my friends. We sat on my parents' couch, we recorded it on our phones, and we just talked about how much we didn't like Natalie Anderson, which was hilarious because Natalie Anderson goes on to win the season. we did episode two, we did episode three, we put it out, I published it, you know, put it on Facebook, whatever. And nobody listened. Nobody cared. And my friend was like, dude, this is dumb. I don't want to do this. I don't care. So he stopped doing it. And Will reached out to me like 3 weeks later. Me and Will went to Miami together and we were in a couple classes together. We didn't really like hang out. Will was, you know, Will's Will, as everybody knows. That's the nicest thing I can say about Will. No, but like, we didn't really hang out. Like we were in screenwriting classes together and we would see each other at football games, at tailgates, whatever, but we didn't really hang out. And Will reached out to me on Facebook and was like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, if nobody else wants to do it, I would do it. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever. And then it kept going, it kept going. And then finally he was like, I really think we should do this. And I was like, well, how do we do it? He said, Google Hangouts, this, whatever. And so episode 11, the double boot of Alec and somebody else was the first one that we actually did. I will never forget watching the episode with my parents, grabbing my laptop and going, let's see how this goes. And walking down the stairs into their basement to record a podcast and that coming up. And they're like, how was that? And I'm like, I don't know. And I think we got like 205 views or something like that. Like it was so bad. And yeah, that was it.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, I obviously started very differently, but on the internet, when you post videos, you don't start off, you know, getting a lot of views. And so you kind of, when you do this thing, when you start something new, when you start a new platform or you start a new account or do whatever else, you have to be okay with maybe kind of making a fool of yourself. I think that the world fears failure to such degree where people are not willing to try because it makes them look, they think that it makes them look foolish. I had a friend who was trying to be an influencer and I saw her and she was like, don't judge me. Like, you know, I'm trying to, I was like, that's you're doing the thing. Like you have to put yourself out there. You have to try because you're going to start off with no views. You're going to start off with 200 views and then you can grow and build, but very rarely do things just happen overnight. And I think Phil, the specialist, is such a testament to that because, you know, I might be exposing myself here. I hadn't heard of the specialists until you guys got a shout out because I didn't really listen to RHAP, but I'm not a big podcast person. Like I've got so many thoughts in my head already. Your girl doesn't need more things talking over it. And so when I went to Ron Clark's thing back in, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was 3 years ago now because Ron didn't know I was coming.
Yeah. And you got a shout out and I went, oh, what's this? What is this specialists? And I looked it up and I was like, oh, this is great. Because I think you filled like an area of fans talking about the show from a fan's perspective, not from a player's perspective. Well, and I think that's one of the best things about this channel is we're all fans.
Yeah, and it was during season 46. So I'd interviewed Ron during season 38. And I remember the 38 cast was one of the friendliest to Alexa and I back when we were podcasting. Like they were all really big fans. Kelly Wentworth. I said that as if it was two different people. Kelly Wentworth. Lauren Wardog was like a huge fan of us at the time. And then you had all these other people. Like that helped us to build the gap into Rick Devins. I had met David Wright because he had obviously played on Adam's season. And 33 was a big season for us. But season 38 was a great season for us. And I remember going to the finale and then going to the finale after party. And I was talking to Ron and Ron was like, I'd love to come on your podcast. I would love to. Like, that would be an honor. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, dude, normally, like when you get those types of people, we had just come off David versus Goliath. I could get Carl. I could get Davey. I could get Kara. I could get Alec. I'm not getting Johnny Mundo. Like, that's not going to happen. And so I just assumed like there's no shot I'm getting Ron Clark. Like he's at a different level. And Ron Clark was more than happy to do it. And he came on and he had really bad internet, something that I already had at the beginning of this podcast. And he was so apologetic and everything. And so I wasn't sure if he would remember me because it was the only time we ever had him on the podcast. And I got the ticket. This was when the tickets were free because people didn't really know how big of a deal the Ron Clark Academy was in the Survivor community, at least. And so I got the ticket. My wife and I went up and I went in and he was there greeting. And I said, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm Phil. I do the special. He was like, my internet was so bad. He's like, you know, we all have those moments in our lives where we say, man, I wish I would have done that better. I just wasn't prepared. And I think about that all the time. And then he gave the shout out there because I think he was just like more surprised that I had even shown up. And then since then, he's kind of extended the invite for 48 and for 50 both to go. And I always say those are my favorite events. I love Bryson One and everything, but just the venue of what Ron Clark is able to do with how you watch the show and everything is just a different level that like nobody else can hit. But yeah, I mean, that was a big deal because when I got that shout out, I mean, that was a big deal for me too, because what people don't really realize is after 40, we were on top of the world. I mean, season 40 was incredible. Sarah Lucina came on our podcast. We interviewed her before she even went on RHAP. We had Adam, we had Wendell, we had Ethan Zahn, like Tony Vlachos was texting me trying to schedule, which if you ever want to try to schedule something, don't do it with Tony Vlachos. And I mean that with love. The man's like, hey, you got 15 minutes right now. I'm like, Tony, it's noon on a Tuesday. Like, what are we doing? And so it was really like, you know, we were on top of the world, but COVID hit and it shut down Survivor for a while. And we did the top 100 with Russell Hantz and everything like that. Season 41 was miserable. And we still got the exit. We still got some tell-alls, which was really fun with Xander and Evie and Danny McRae. And it was really fun. And then season 42, we weren't able to do the tell-alls. And season 43, I got really sick. I had a massive surgery. It was a really big deal. And that was when Alexa and I were both like, should we keep going? And then season 44 happened and neither one of us were big fans, but we went to the Bryce and Wen finale. And that was where Bruce was like, dude, of course I remember you. This is great. Oh my God. It's so nice to meet you, whatever. And that meant a lot. So then going to the event in 46, it was the second event I'd gone to. And when I lived in LA before season 40, I went to everything. And it was the second event I had gone to. And for Ron to give that shout out meant so much. And it was like, okay, we still have some sort of relevance to us. Because it did feel like we were becoming a little irrelevant in the early 40s, which was a frightening feeling because of how high we were at the end of the 30s into season 40.
What do you think was the season like in that early part for you guys that really kind of, you know, set you up for success? Like, what was the season where you noticed that this was something that you maybe aren't just doing for fun anymore, but you're actually doing this as you know, a thing that people want to hear what you're saying?
Millennials, Gen X, no doubt, because we had Adam, and Adam had won. So we had done a game for season 30, a game for season 31, and a game for season 32. And Adam had won one of our games and we gave away a buff and that was great. And then he ended up being on season 33. And Adam will always tell you, like, he did not do the work to get everybody from his cast on our podcast. Like, he'll say that. He'll be like, I just said, like, you guys existed. If they wanted to come on, they wanted to come on. But we got Adam on as our first guest ever. That was an actual player. And then we were able to get Brett, Chris, Sunday, Will. Never had Hannah. Never had Ken, although I've met Hannah many times, and I really do like Hannah a lot. Weren't able to get Zeke and Michaela because they were going out to play season 34. Wasn't able to get David Wright, but I was able to meet David Wright and talk to David Wright. And I feel like I'm missing other people from 33 who, like, we had on the podcast. I mean, Jay is another one. Never had him on the podcast, but, like, I've talked to Jay many, many, many times. And that was the season where it was like, oh, we can do this. And then 34 was interesting because now it's like we've gotten players to do the podcast with us. Mm-hmm. Will anybody from a returning player season be willing to do it? And Troy Zam was such a fan of ours. He was such a big fan of ours, which meant a lot because I was a huge Troy Zan fan in 24. I mean, during that time, that was 2012. I was 20 years old. I mean, Troy Zan was like, yes, that's the guy. I hate this season. I hate everything about it. But, like, I could feel that, like, fiery older guy. He kind of reminded me of, like, that's what I'm going to be when I'm 45 or whatever the hell age he was. And Troy Zan was such a big fan, and that meant a lot. And so he came onto the podcast, and he was really – I think he was the only interview we did for season 34. But then when 35 came back, we were able to get interviews again. And that's when we got, like, Joe Mena, Allie Elliott, a couple other people from that season as well. And then Ghost Island, we pretty much took it to another level because that's when we got Wendell. We got Dom. We were able to get Bradley and Kellen and all of them and James. And that was a great season. And that was when it took to another level. Millennials vs. Gen X was the first one where we were like, oh, this can actually be something. And what people don't understand, and sorry, this is such a long answer, but this is what you get for interviewing me.
I love it.
This is what you get for interviewing Phil. What people don't understand is back then it was so much harder to get people onto shows and stuff, like onto podcasts, because there were so few and people didn't really know what it was. And I'm not saying that that's like, oh, we were so good at networking that we were able to get people on. It was just strictly like there weren't all the TikTok didn't exist. Instagram wasn't what Instagram is now. Facebook was never a place that you were going to go post an hour long interview with somebody. So it was just fewer and further between. And then you had Rob, and that was really it, other than the regular exit press. So people weren't jumping on everything. And nowadays I feel like, you know, people like Rachel Amont did the whole tour. And that's not a bad thing. That just shows like there's so much more to do, and the fans and the players are more willing to do it. Back then it was like, what can we do? What can't we do? And so getting those interviews really was a massive deal because other people weren't really doing it. And that meant a lot because we were just two guys in our mid 20s being like, do you want to do podcasts? And then Will left after season 33 to go work on the show. And Alexa came in and I was really worried we were going to lose some momentum when Alexa came in just because people didn't know who she was. Mm-hmm. And instead, like, people ended up attaching to Alexa so much that it ended up launching us. And she did it for, she still has done more seasons than Will has done, even though Will's come back because.
Take that, Will.
Yeah, take that, Will. I know. That's when Will listens to this in 15 years, he'll be offended and text me about it. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, people were more forgiving of changing hosts early on than I thought they were going to be. And, you know, we were able to keep on getting guests, which was nice.
Now, how do you think like running a podcast has affected your fandom of the show? Because obviously like a fan in theory, like if you're a fan, you just like come and go, you know, it's maybe a little bit more lighthearted. Maybe you're an intense fan, but making it into a podcast, you've created basically like a second job. Has that affected like how you watch the show and how you enjoy the show? Because you know that, hey, attached to this fandom, I can't just enjoy it. I also have to make sure I'm taking notes and make sure I have all of this like in my head. Has that affected your fandom of the show at all? Or has it like increased your fandom because you have to, you know, pay more attention? How is that? How have you been able to balance that?
When we hate it, like when I hate the show, when I say we, it's like I talk about everybody and then it's like I don't have split personality. It's like when I watch the show,
it's
I can't help myself. But when I watch the show and if I hate a season, like I did not like 48 at all. And like, sorry, Kyle, sorry, Camilla, like I love both of you, but like I did not like 48 at all. Doing the podcast made 48 bearable for me because I can come on and I can complain about what I don't like, what I wish would have happened, where I wish the show was going. So that does actually enhance my viewing, right? Like when I sit down and I watch the seasons now, it's really hard for me to say like 48 is the worst of all time because I still enjoyed podcasting during 48. 41, and people always give me a hard time being like, you need to rewatch 41. 41 is my least favorite season of all time because I was miserable podcasting it. I was miserable watching it. I hated the decisions they made. It got too random. I hated the direction it took the show and I did not enjoy talking about it. But because of the podcast, I kept talking about it. Like I didn't really have a choice but to talk about it. So I think it definitely helps my fandom. I think it keeps me more engaged, even on seasons where maybe I wouldn't be paying attention as hard. I will say though, it gets to the point every now and then where it feels like work. 50, it never felt like work. 49, it felt a little bit like work just because as the season started unfolding, the writing on the wall was there, and you're like, oh man, the tribes really did spoil who's about to win this season, didn't it? And then that starts to be a little frustrating. Because then you're like, okay, I want to watch Survivor for the excitement. That's why we're always like very anti-spoiler. Because we want to watch the show and be shocked when somebody like Ozzy gets voted out with an idol in his pocket. And go, oh my God, I never thought Ozzy would have that happen. You want to be shocked. And when the seasons aren't shocking, that's when they're disappointing. You know, but also doing the podcast does make it where people try to spoil you. Because I don't know. You talk about surviving the fandom. That's what it's all about. Those types of fans drive me crazy. And that's why, like, I always go at the trolls. People say, avoid the trolls, ignore the trolls. I say, no, go at the trolls because eventually they go away. Like, if you just keep letting the trolls dominate the conversation on your channel, it's not helping your channel and it's not helping your fans because then your fans are getting frustrated. And then all of a sudden, your entire comment section is just your fans, your real fans, arguing with trolls. And then you're trying to delete. And pretty much my whole thing during season 50 was like, you spoil one thing. Even if you're like just trolling, even if it's a fake spoiler, even if you say Suri wins, everybody knows it because of Kalshi, you're getting deleted. Like I don't, you're getting blocked and I don't care. So yeah, that's
yeah. True. Dodging spoilers has become such a pivotal part of my everyday during a season. Yeah. 49 was particularly rough. And I feel like I'm also, personally going into this where, you know, I'm just now, like I'm in those early stages, like you guys were, you know, back in the 30s, but that's kind of where I am at now. And one thing I've learned is players love to spoil their season. It's brutal. And I've had to go on the internet and be like, hey, nobody tell me anything. If you tell me something, I'll get mad. I'll get very, very mad. And it's been adopted into like a people, I'll be talking to somebody and they're about to say something. And they go, wait, you don't like to know? No, I don't. No, I don't. Walk away, change the subject. Because there is something about, you know, we kind of equate Survivor to sports. And there's something about in sports, you don't know what's going to happen because it's happening live in front of you. Survivor, it's not happening live in front of you. So you have, you know, the potential to be spoiled, but I like watching it like a sport. I like being shocked something crazy happened. I like, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like we have a very similar, you know, mind to that. Because there are people who love spoilers. I'm just not one of those people. How do you feel like, you know, now with these prediction markets and things like that, how do you feel like Survivor can continue on trying to be spoiler free? Like, do you think that, you know, Survivor will try to fight against Kalshi and all of this stuff? Or what do you see for the future of that specifically?
Jeff already is. Like, Jeff came out and made a public statement about it in one of his interviews where he talked about, you know, he didn't know that this was happening. And he said that if he ever finds out that anybody in his team or on the show is trading, they're fired like immediately. And that's how it should be. I mean, it is insider trading if you know the information. I think that it's a big problem for Survivor because part of the fun is not knowing. I mean, I remember during season 43, everybody thought Jesse won. And then people were saying, if Jesse doesn't win, they under-edited another female winner with Cass. And the whole season, I kept saying, guys, why is Gabler getting screen time? Gabler's getting so much screen time. He's getting so much screen time. And I said, Jesse's going to win this season. But if Jesse doesn't win, when we got down to like final 7 or 8, I said, if Jesse doesn't win, it's going to be Gabler. That season wasn't spoiled. And that pissed off some of the fan base because the online fan base I have found wants to be right more than they want to be wrong. Like, there's something about just like this feeling of knowledge and like being smart in the community, which, I mean, I don't know. There's some psychology to that maybe like Tori Meehan can come on and talk about. But like, I feel like, you know, a season like 43 was so much fun for me. And I love season 43 because it was so unpredictable. And because I saw the Gabler edit, and I still get in this argument with people who are pretty big in the community, who will be like, it can never be that unseen as a winner. And I'm like, you all just weren't watching the show right. Like, you were just so blinded by it's Jesse or it's Cassidy. You weren't watching the show. You weren't picking up what they were putting down. They gave you hints the whole way through that Mike Gabler was legitimately a contender. And people just missed it because of the way they watched the show. But because that season wasn't spoiled, you didn't have the people online, unlike the season before in season 42, which was very spoiled. People would all of a sudden, I'm in my chat after episode 1, people are like, this Marianne girl, somebody we should be watching out for, huh? And I'm like, Marianne sucked in the first episode. Like, what are you talking about? And then as the season starts progressing and you start getting this groupthink over in the chat of Marianne is so good, I'm like, Marianne is playing a good game right now, but nobody would be thinking she was winning, and especially the archetype she is. And like, not for nothing, a lot of our fan base is more on like the bro-y sports side, which I know. We also have a lot of female listeners and everything, but more of our audience is going to be on the male side. They're not the kinds who were going for the Marianne typically. And all of a sudden they're like, Marianne's so good. I'm like, this shit's spoiled. Like, and then people will say, Phil, are you spoiled? And I say, I'm not, but I kind of am. Like, that's this weird middle ground now that I have on Survivor. Even during 50, it's like you deleted pretty much. I was down to Aubrey, Ozzy, Jonathan, and Suri at like final 10, because every comment is that one of them is winning based on Kalshi. And so people will say, Phil, are you spoiled? And it's like, no, I'm not. But I'm also the one who's going and deleting the comments. I just don't know which ones are real and which ones are fake. And you see these names over and over. So you start to say, okay, it's probably down to one of these four people. But then by the time the Michelle part of that happened anyway, I was like, okay, Aubrey won. This is over. It doesn't matter. So it wasn't all that shocking. But there is a serious issue here, because part of the fun of Survivor and what makes Survivor compelling is that week after week, somebody dies, right? They get eliminated, but it's a TV show where every week somebody dies. We see a dream get ripped out from these people. And you can't do that with a regular scripted TV show. And so Survivor is able to get away with this. And the drama is who's going to go home. Now, for most viewers, they have no idea. They are watching the episode and they're going through the motions. But for the online community, it's a big deal. And since the online community is the most vocal of the communities, you know, it spreads like wildfire and it sucks. And like, it was easier to not trust the noise when Kalshi didn't exist. Like, when it was just, oh, I read this on Spoiled Survivor. It's like, who knows? Spoiled Survivor is probably full of trolls. Like, who knows what's going on? But if you go over to Kalshi and people are saying Aubrey has an 80% chance, I'm like, well, people are putting their money where their mouth is. This isn't just going onto a forum and just trying to troll an audience.
Yeah, that was like, Kalshi's very weird. And I feel very, you know, conflicted basically just because of like, you know, you see all these comments, you see all this stuff, and I'm trying to remain as unspoiled as possible. I actually asked a couple of like podcasters who've been doing this a long time. I'm like, what do you do? What do you do to avoid spoilers? And they basically answered, you gaslight yourself.
Yeah.
You gaslight yourself as much as you possibly can. And I had to do that in 50. And I think I was actually pretty successful because at a certain point, I genuinely thought Suri was winning. Like, I was like, she says it's her favorite season. And she has this insane edit. And yeah, I know she had one episode with no confessionals, but I don't know. And I, at one point I was like, I legitimately think this woman is winning season 50. But then it turned out, you know, the trolls in the comments on day one were right. But I did, you know, you kind of have to get good at gaslighting yourself, because one thing that I feel like I'm having trouble coming to terms with, as somebody who speaks my opinions on Survivor, is becoming a kind of journalist for the show rather than just a fan. Is that something that you've ever toyed, had conflicted feelings about, you know, being somebody who reports or feels like they need to remain unbiased, or are you really like, do you approach this as a fan with a fan's opinion?
I try to keep it to the fan's opinion all the time. I mean, the one thing that is to my benefit and also a negative is that there's no publication attached to us. So like Mike Bloom has Parade, right? Dalton has EW. Gordon Holmes for the longest time had Xfinity. He now Gordon does his own thing. You know, but there is this fear of like, if you say the wrong thing, is CBS going to get mad at you? Is production going to get mad at you? Are the players going to get mad at you? I know that there's people in this community who don't like me at all. But at the end of the day, like I try to keep it as not personal as possible. Like when I go out and I say, I don't think the casting for the new era has been very good because I think it's too homogenous. If like that bothers you, I don't know what else I can say. Cause I think that's me saying it as nicely as I really can. Like Will and I say that all the time on this podcast, but that doesn't mean every casting choice is bad. Like Q is an incredible casting choice. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that all the time, but people do like, they don't take well to the negative at all. And that becomes hard. But I feel like I know what the fans are feeling. At least I know what my fans are feeling. And I do go on X and you know, go and look at what some of the people in that community are saying, which that is just an echo chamber. When I say the internet and internet people, I mean, X, Reddit, Instagram, TikTok, people who just keep on parroting the same thing. And they now have no idea what other people actually think about the show. And they think that what they're parroting is fact. That's what I mean by the internet. But yeah, it has been tough because I've talked to you about this. I've talked to other people in the community about it. Look, like I feel like it's more important for me to say what I truly feel about what is happening than to worry about getting invited to something or playing Survivor. Like I don't think I have a chance to ever play Survivor, and that sucks sometimes, but I enjoy what I do here and I enjoy like my regular life and all that stuff. And I enjoy what the Survivor community has given me. If I never play, I still feel like I'm a part of the Survivor community. I'll never be a part of it to the level that even somebody like Hannah Rose is, who quits on day three, but I still am a part of it. And so like, it's that balance of like, what are you willing to do? And what are you really trying to get out of it? And for me, like, I just want to provide a podcast that people can come to and know that they are going to get authentic opinions. I mean, go listen to Will's 10-minute rant about the Blood Moon. Listen to Blake anytime he talks. I mean, Tegwith, when you come on these shows, you try to say something too positive. I say, all right, Tegwith, now let's look at the other side. And be like, okay, fine. And, you know, you'll get into it a little bit. And, like, that's always been the thing with the fans that we try to have here. But we don't try to get clickbaity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy. And I don't mean this like, oh, we could have so many followers on TikTok, but it really is so easy to just be like, hey, you know, Tony's actually the worst player in Survivor history. Like, I'm never going to do those kinds of things, but it is also about giving your opinions. Like, I really think Chris Doherty's a top 5 Survivor player, and people will roll their eyes at me. And I'm like, but I do. Like, I really think that the game he played, he only played once, but the game he played is important. So I try to keep it fan. I will say, I probably go easier on the players as I've gotten older. Like, I feel like I'm going a little Jeffy there.
Okay, where, gee, I was going to say, okay, Jeff.
Yeah, I feel like I've gotten a little bit easier on the players. There's some players that I'll still rip a little bit. Obviously, Will had his whole thing with just like roasting Joe for the last two seasons. But like, I try to keep it so much to game. Like if somebody I think makes a terrible game move, I try to keep it to game. Now, the only difference is like if somebody then is a player who then will either comment on our podcast or be negative to other people in the community who aren't being negative to them and start getting personal. I have no problem getting personal. And like, that's just my New Jersey personality. Like I'm ready to fight when people want to fight, but I do try to keep it as like game, because I have had the opportunity to meet a lot of the people who have played Survivor. And when you meet them, you realize like a lot of them are just normal people who happen to be on TV and they're going to have their worst moments and their best moments shown. And like Joe's not Superman the same way that like Courtney Yates isn't the biggest bitch you ever met in your entire life. So like those two things are both right. But what you see on TV is going to be the, you know, polar opposite ends of what the show wants you to see.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, I feel the same way. Like I will talk about, you know, people's games. I'm not as harsh as other people because I'm just not as harsh of a person typically. Like my views are, I'm a pretty easygoing person in real life. And I kind of bring that to my stuff, but you know, you kind of see what these players have to deal with on the internet. And so I do feel like knowing that makes it even, you know, it makes it so that I even more want to focus on just their game and nothing else.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question, what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge, they also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
But I feel like it's so interesting because you have been a part of the survivor community in this way for such a long time. Before, like you said, before the craziness that is social media now. And I do want to say something to you really quickly, because, you know, there might be 751 people who have played Survivor and you might never make it to those ranks. I might not never make it to those ranks, but what you have created here, I think, is something that not everyone can do. You are persistent. You show up, you know, people can rely on you and they can rely on, you know, your honesty, to what you truly believe. And that's why you have grown this podcast and this little section of the internet, over the last, you know, 10 plus years. And I do not think that's something that's easy. If it were easy, there'd be way, way more to this level, and there aren't. And I think that's something that, you know, needs to be applauded, because while you might not be one of those 751, you are, you know, one of a much smaller group that I think people will turn to listen and to trust. And I think that's something I wanted to call out here, because, you know, again, it's not easily done.
I don't take compliments well, but thank you. I can never get to like the serious level. My wife always says that. It's like, can you just like say something real for 1 second? And I'm like, no, I can't turn it off, but thank you. It does mean a lot. And like, I've had players who have said that stuff to me in the past, and like, you know, I've been a lot harder on the new era than I have on the older school. And you know, I just, again, that goes back to like kind of the people that they're casting and just what I watch on the show. But like, there's very few people who I have met from the new era where I'm like, oh God, like most of the time I do really, really like the people who I am meeting. And so, I appreciate you saying that, 'cause a lot of them, you know, they either say, oh, we went and listened before I played and we listened to this or we listened to that. And you know, it's an interesting spot to be in, though, as I'm sure you feel sometimes. You're not a player, but you're not a regular fan. So where do you stand? And it's like towing this weird line. And like, I have an aggressive personality when it comes to like my opinions and my feelings about, you know, Survivor and other things as well. And like, if we're sitting down and we're eating dinner, like, and we have a conversation, like, I'll tell you how I feel about whatever, and we'll have that conversation. But I'm also not one of those people who's just like, oh, I belong here, so like, let me push my way in. Like, I don't have that mentality, and I never did. And so like, I'm like a vampire. You have to invite me in. You know, I'll stand outside.
He is actually a vampire, guys. He's not like a vampire. I don't sleep.
But like, I feel like I'm the person, I'll stand outside the door until I get that invite.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's a little bit tough, because it is like, I'm not a player, but I'm not just a regular fan. So I know that there's people who know who I am, but like, where, you know, if they're doing a player event, and like some fans are trying to get their way in, it's like, is that something that I should try to be a part of, or is that something I should try to avoid? And like, that's a weird place. But you mentioned the persistence, and that's one thing I am good at. And I know you have the text messages to prove that of, hey, Tegwith, where's this? Hey, Tegwith, where's this? Because I'll just text you. I mean, people always say, I don't really like double texting. It's like, that's why it took me a long time to get married, because I finally had a woman who was okay with double texting. Because I will just bombard people with messages and be like, what's going on. So persistence is not my problem, that's for sure.
But I think that's, you know, I think it's important, because it's not, you know, persistence is key, but also just being able to show up even when the views dip. And I know that we've talked about this a bit, you know, what we have seen online, this boom for Survivor, is not going to continue after 50. Mm-hmm. People, there might be people who still watch, and you know, the numbers may grow, but it's not going to be at all like what we've seen over the past year. And so, you know, what do you see maybe for this channel, but also just for Survivor with 51 and beyond, with the next quote unquote big season being, you know, 5 years away, if it's, you know, we'll probably have a returning player season before, you know, 60, but
the
landmark season 5 years away. What do you see for 51 and beyond for both this channel, maybe Survivor on the internet, or just Survivor in general?
I think, unfortunately, it's going to get worse on the internet. I really do. Like, I think that TikTok.
What do you mean by worse? Like,
I think that your comments are going to keep being awful. Like, you know, you're still going to get the trolls. You're going to get the people. There's this thing, and it's just like human nature. And I said this a little bit earlier, but like, people want to be right. Right. Like, there's this feeling of when you're right, you're on like a caliber above. You get put on a pedestal. And I do feel like with, you know, spoilers and with, I mean, Spoiled Survivor is a very easy Reddit page to Google, everybody. Like, I know it's there. Everybody knows it's there. And with all that stuff, there's this thing of like people who are a little bit younger, who like their whole life has been on the internet. They want, it's like their way of like showing their Survivor knowledge is to be like, hey, everybody knows Aubrey wins. And it's like, okay, but why, what's the point of that? Like, I don't understand. I can't understand the psychology of wanting to post that and ruin the good time for other people. One of my favorite shows is The Leftovers. And there's a speech at the end by Carrie Coon where she says, you know, everybody was playing with the ball at the baseball game. And then one guy took it and popped it. And she's like, why did he have to pop the ball? And that's how I feel about the people who spoil Survivor. Why did you feel that? Like, what made you feel so powerful in that moment? So I do think it's going to get worse from that point, because I do think that people are just getting a little bit less and less like empathetic with people's feelings about like what they value. And then, but I do think that the show, in my opinion, and others might disagree, I think it can only get better. Like, truly, I think that the monotony of the 40s was so apparent. And I think even Jeff got bored with it, but didn't want to admit it. And that doesn't mean every season's bad. I mean, actually 47, 49, 46 are three of my favorites. And that was towards the back end, but the show just was so repetitive. Everything was the same. And I do think the 50s is going to be different. And I think what's going to be interesting is like, how do people adapt though? Like, Tegwith, I don't see you going anywhere. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see you going anywhere. I don't think Tony Squares is going anywhere. I know that we're not going anywhere, but I do think there's a lot of people who started off their stuff right before 50 and they kind of got this, wow, everything is amazing. Like, everybody cares about Survivor. And I think there's going to be a drop off. And I do think, and I don't want to sound arrogant here, so like, please don't take this the wrong way, everybody listening. But like, for lack of a better phrase, I do think it's going to trim some of the fat. Like, I really do. I think that there's going to be people who, you know, you'll see hit one video that gets like 100,000 views on TikTok and then everything else has 300 views. They're living off that 100,000 view video. They might start to disappear because they're realizing no one really cares as much. And I think the build up to 50 was just as important as 50. And I know that because we started, our first full season was 30. Everybody cared about us during Worlds Apart because they all knew Second Chance was coming. Like, that was a big deal. Once the Second Chance announcement came, that's where a lot of our views were coming from, was people were excited about the show again. So all of that long-winded answer is like, the specialist is going to keep doing what we're doing. The prop bet game is going to stay the way that it was this season. We're going to be putting out like 4 episodes a week. Hopefully you keep doing Matt Chat, power rankings, all that. But I also think that there's going to be a little bit of a move away from players wanting to do as many guesting appearances, because I do feel that without the 50 carat being dangled, I do think that there's going to be a little bit of a drop off in interest from some of the people who want to play again, but maybe aren't the biggest Survivor fans. So I do think we're going to see a little bit of a difference here as we come out, but it won't be as insane after 40 to 41, because we don't have a worldwide pandemic that's, you know, taking up a year and a half to 2 years of everybody's life.
Yeah, that really, it's so interesting because, you know, while that did obviously was horrible, it was amazing for the Survivor, you know, fandom, because I'm not saying Survivor was waning, but I started watching Survivor, you know, this in 2018. So I saw a little bit of the Survivor world before the pandemic. After the pandemic, people are talking to me about Survivor. Maybe it's just because they know who I am, but like, people at a bridal shower, Survivor was just randomly brought up. And I was sitting at the table and we, you know, started talking about it. I've heard Survivor. I work at a restaurant. I'll hear people talk about Survivor at a dinner table. They'll talk about it. And, you know, it happens way more than it did in those first 2 years that I was watching the show. And, you know, obviously bringing in new fans means new, different opinions. And I feel like, you know, it has really kind of, really, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like energized, I think, the production team, because they know that, oh, new people can still get on board with this show. And I feel like people were still, you know, joining. I know a lot of people started watching right around when I started watching, coincidentally. You know, I just only started watching because I, you know, knew Ryan. But it's just so interesting to see, are we going to have an influx of people after 50? Because I also know a lot of people started watching 50 and that's their first season they never watched, which is crazy to me. But we might see more people watching the show because of that as well.
Well, and it's interesting with 50 because you'll get a lot of people who their first season was watching 50 and they say, oh, I'm going to go back and rewatch stuff. It's a long summer ahead. It is a long summer. And that's always the one problem that Survivor really does have is almost every time they do a returning player season, it's a spring season.
Yeah.
And it's a real culmination. And then people sit with that for a while, but they can't really build off the momentum as much as they want to.
Yeah.
Vanuatu, one of my favorite seasons, a little forgotten because it follows All Stars. That was a summer, a spring to summer thing. And I do feel like that is pretty consistent across the board. And so how many of these people who are saying in May, I'm going to watch this, all of a sudden now you got Big Brother. Now you got, you know, the Traitors, Civilians is coming. You have all these other shows. Are they really going to be around in September, especially when there is no red carpet for season 51, when there is no live reunion for season 51, when you're not flying out to Fiji for season 51, or there's no carrot being dangled of being flying out to Fiji or going to the live reunion or doing any of that stuff? Are people still going to care as much? And truly, I think that that's where you're going to get. Survivor fans are going to stick and they're going to keep doing what they do. And I think the non-Survivor fans are probably going to fall off. And that doesn't mean if you just started watching in 50, you're not a Survivor fan. Tony Squares watched 49 seasons in 49 weeks. Like, I believe he's a Survivor fan now, even if Survivor Co-Wrong is a way better season than he thinks. Like, he's still a fan, right? Like, he is there. So, like, but there are other people where it's like, oh, I watched 50. I liked 50. But if you're not a diehard fan, do you really care about 51?
Yeah.
Do you really care about 52 when you're going back to normal people? And I don't know what the highest level of celebrity on 51 and 52 is, but it's not Mike White. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a very good point. Hey, a little plug here for those who want to make sure to keep their Survivor fandom going throughout the summer, doing a little Survivor China rewatch. You want to join me? It'll be very fun. I know this is supposed to be about Phil, but
you're doing that on Monday, Phil's right? channel. Is that the first summer episode we have?
Yeah. So, I'm watching the episode live, but we're doing the recap of the premiere on Monday. So, that's June 1st. So it'll be very fun to do kind of that little thing, but you're 100% right. Yeah. It's your channel.
What the hell?
It's your channel.
You could plug stuff on my channel that you're doing for my channel on my podcast. What's happening
right now? You're right. You're so right. You're so right. But I do think it's interesting. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see the numbers go from, you know, and they love to say that Survivor is, you know, failing, Survivor's ending. You know, the numbers are always going down and down and down. But I think what I've learned is that the fandom feels really, really strong. Like, people are showing up. They're talking about the show. I'm seeing more and more people talk about it on the internet than I ever have. You know, influencers are talking, regular fans are talking, everybody's talking about Survivor. Will it continue? Probably not the same level for 51, but if it's a great season, maybe it's more. You know what I mean? Like, we might see more. But I do have a question for you. You've done this for such a long time. And this is going to be he might not answer this question, guys. And you've had a lot of guests on the show. Do you have a guest that stands out as somebody you were like, this was somebody who either meant a lot to me that they, you know, took the time to come out, or it was just an amazing interview, amazing talking about the episode. Do you have one that really stands out to you?
So I have a couple.
I said Phil.
Yeah, well, this is the political answer here, right? Okay, I'm actually going to give answers. I'm going to give names.
Love.
But I have a couple because I think that this is big. So most people who have listened know that I'm a sports guy. Like, that's where I started off in film. That's where I was at the beginning. Now I work in sports. I'm an editor for a sports betting website. I write articles for a sports betting website. Like, that's what my life is in. Getting David Sampson and Scott Pollard was awesome. And I know people are not Scott Pollard fans, but, like, I'm a Celtics fan. Like, Scott Pollard coming on my podcast and chatting with me about Michelle Fitzgerald was insane. Okay. So, like, that, I know that he's pissed off a lot of people in this community, but, like, that is a special place in my heart. And David Sampson, I mean, I went to school in Miami. I ran cross country at the University of Miami. To have David Sampson, who's the ex-owner of the Marlins, at the time, the owner of the Marlins, make time for us. I'm like, wait a second, this guy doesn't need to be doing this. So I love that. Adam is always my favorite guest, right? And apologies to everybody else, but like Adam was our first guy. Like to me, Adam is like my first friend in the community. So for me, it's very easy to just be like, look, we can sit down, we can chat, we can have a really good time. It doesn't matter what the topic is. Come on for the traders, come on for Survivor, come on for anything. I can listen to Adam talk about anything. Maybe that's another reason why I won't get cast on the show. But I love Adam. And I think Adam has been done dirty by the powers that be a little bit. I don't think he deserves the negative rap that he gets. I think that Adam is great for the show. Adam reminds me of me, where Adam will be critical, but at the end of the day, he loves Survivor so much. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. Loving Survivor is what it is about. And he loves it. He loves every second of it, but he will still critique it. And I think that people have a hard time understanding, like when you're being critiqued by somebody who loves it, they really do want what's best for you. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between that and the people who are just critiquing a critique. Other ones that just pop up, like getting Sarah Lucina before RJP. I mean, that's still our most watched video on the channel. That's insane. Like, I love Sarah for doing that. That was the only time we ever had her on. I don't know if she's still as into it as she was back then, but like, that was a great interview. I always loved having that on. Sunday was the one that shocked me the most. And we had her on so many times. So many times. So love Sunday. I'll cry if I talk about her. So done there.
Oh, I feel like, you know, it's so interesting because you do kind of create these relationships with people, even if you've never met them in real life. You know, just because, you know, you're talking about this TV show, Survivor really does bridge a lot of, you know, gaps, whether it be like location, just anything. Like, you know, we all love this show and, you know, the passion maybe comes out in different ways. But you really can connect with somebody over the show. And I've, you know, created some of my greatest friendships because of Survivor, because I met them at a Survivor event. Mm-hmm. Obviously I didn't meet Ryan because of Survivor, but our relationship definitely benefits from us watching Survivor together. It's just such a like interesting thing. And having, being able to talk about people who actually went out there and played it is just such a gift. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to kind of hear what they have to say and talk to them about it. It's so much fun.
And one other person I have to shout out, two more, Wentworth and Fishback too. Cause like the fact that Fishback came on during his book tour, I was like, okay, this is great. I'm happy we have Fishback on. But the fact that he came back on again after that, I was like, oh man, like for him to be willing to do that. And then for Kelly, like over all the years, I mean, Kelly's really stuck with us and like been so good. So I had to shout out those two too. As you were talking, I was thinking still, I'm like, I gotta make sure I don't, you know,
if I keep going, he's going to keep saying every single person.
Those are the big ones. All the other people just canceled me, but those are the people that I don't think you're going to want to come back anyway. You know, they're like 51. Who cares about 51?
What is your favorite? Do you have a favorite like episode to film? Like, cause I know you do so many different ones. It's your favorite, just like the recap episode. Cause I know you also love like predictions and power rankings too.
Honestly, the prop bet was so fun this year.
Was it?
Doing the new version of the prop bet. And I did that with a lot of people in the community. I honestly am thinking that I might do that now, like moving forward, maybe with like a stationary guest, like either Blake moving him over there or doing that with a Survivor player, because I feel like it's a little bit better. Sometimes ranking the players can get a little monotonous. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, I mean, look, we all know that there's a lot of players in this community who are spoiled. Like they are spoiled and they're coming on and they're doing their best. It's like you said, gaslighting yourself and they're ranking. But you can tell sometimes it's like, okay, do they actually think this? Or is this just like, they're trying not to put the spoiler out there. They don't want to be the one who's like ruining it. So that gets a little tough. Whereas with the prop bet game, it's like, who do you think gets the most confessionals? Nobody knows. Like, So that's kind of interesting. I always love the tell-alls though. That was always my favorite thing. And it really sucks that we can't do those anymore. Cause even we did the hour long with Bruce and one with Ben. It's just not the same. Doing those tell-alls where you sat down and you chatted for 2.5 to 3 hours and they really spilled everything. I know that things got a little shaky after season 42, which is why I kind of fell apart. But like, if there was one plea that I could make to CBS, it would be to allow those again, because those were the best, whether it was on our channel, Rob's channel, anybody's channel, even if Tyson started doing them, like those were the absolute best. And you just don't get the same thing from the hour longs. And
I mean, did you hear Christian Ubicki, bargaining with Jeff? if I beat you, will you break? Will you let me talk longer after the season's over?
Did he really say that?
Yeah. Yeah. He basically, like, it was like during the, when Jeff was playing, I forget exactly what it was, but he was like, you know, if I can outlast you, or if I can outlast whatever else, let me talk longer and exit press. I don't even know. I think it was tell-alls. I think he literally said tell-alls. Yeah. He might've even specifically said RHAP. I can't remember. But I was like, man, that's so funny. And that's so real. I loved listening to tell-alls. It was one of the ones that I would almost always sit down and listen to.
And I know so many people from 50 would do them with us. Like, yeah. Not so many, but like, I know Kyle would do one. He wants to talk about 48 and 50.
Does he know that everyone here hates him except for me, and I'm the only one that likes him on this channel?
We hate Kyle. No, we just hate 48. Kyle, I was defending Kyle big time yesterday on the Legacies podcast, being like, Kyle needs to play Survivor again. Like, and Will was like, does he really? I don't know if I need to see him. Like, no, you need to see Kyle again. Give me a break. But yeah, I feel like, you know, season 50, like, there'd be people who'd be willing to do it. I know there were for 48. I know there were for 47. Like, think about the guests that we're getting on the show after the fact. Like,
yeah.
I've had Sam, we've had Rachel, we've had Andy, we've had Jake O'Kane, Brandon Don, like, all these people would do it. Like, and I know I'm leaving some people out, but it's like, if they're willing to do these other kinds of podcasts, most of them are also willing to do tell-alls.
Yeah.
And it's a shame we've kind of lost those, because they would spill some stuff maybe they shouldn't spill, but for the most part, they were harmless. Like, they really were. It was just more of like, this is how I got cast. This is what was fun. And I feel like it's been buttoned up a little bit. And I don't know if it's just because they're worried about critiquing or whatever. But again, I go back to the point of like, you have to be willing to be critiqued a little bit if you're making this big reality TV show. And I just think that sometimes Survivor's not as willing to be critiqued. And I think that's a bummer. And they take it, sometimes it gets taken personally. And it's like, it's not meant to be personal. It's just like, we want the show to be as good as it can be. You should know the difference between the people who don't want the show to be good and just want to be angry so they can get a bunch of retweets and likes, and the people who actually want the show to be good. So they're trying to give criticism that's like, come on, we can do better. We can put villains on TV.
It's like a performance review at your job. Like, a performance review at your job maybe are, you know, sometimes a little bit personal, but the idea there is, you know, to make your performance better. And so you're not going to go into performance review and just be like, you're amazing, everything's perfect, blah, 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 blah. There's going to be constructive criticism so that, you know, everybody can benefit. I've never had a job that has a performance review, so clearly you don't.
I haven't either.
I don't know if that's actually what it's like. I unfortunately have worked in hospitality my whole life, so don't really have performance reviews.
I've been freelance for 4 years, and I worked in film before that, so they could give a shit. Your performance review was like, did you get screamed at today?
Yeah. My performance review is you know, if somebody screams at me to go jump into the East River because I didn't give them the table they wanted. That's my performance review. Now, you know, I feel like, you know, you are a very opinionated person in terms of, obviously, we've been talking about all of these things. What is one big change that you think that, and this is taking away, like, obviously 39 days would be ideal, but what's something, one big change from New Era or just from like recent Survivor that they could do that you think would make the show better?
Oh man, it's tough, because right now my mind goes to casting because that's just like where my head is at. But I feel like I've talked about casting to death. But I do feel like they need to go back to like, okay, why did Sandra and Fairplay start on the same trial? Because they both are going to butt heads. And I think Survivor needs more of that butting of heads. I think 50 proved that. I think Survivor 50, having even like Devins and Joe butting heads was exciting. I mean, I don't, you know, Jawan and Savannah in season 49, like, that was good. And I've gotten to know Jawan pretty well. And like, Jawan does not come across as a very confrontational person, but like, him and Savannah, they just had something that didn't click. So my mind goes to casting, but in reality, I just think like, they took the diversity initiative very seriously early on. And that was obviously diversity in who they're casting and, you know, people from different races and sexuality and all that. But I think that they need to use this like diversify word for everything. And that is really my number one change Survivor has to make. Like, you need to be willing to take risks and do something different every season. And I feel like just doing the same thing over and over again, like, I feel like I watched the same 18 people play Survivor 9 times during the New Era. And yeah, we had Hourglass early and then we got rid of Hourglass. We had Do or Die, then we got rid of Do or Die. But for the most part, 3 Tribes of 6, going through the motions, earn the merge, do all this. Survivor just needs to be willing to be different. When you watch the seasons in order, this is like one of my favorite things to talk about. You watch the seasons in order. Season 1 is Borneo. Season 2 is a replica. Season 3, they do the twist. Season 4, they do a different version of that where everybody goes to stands on a disc and they flip them. Season 5 has a fake merge and a schoolyard pick. Season 6 is men versus women. Season 7 is the outcast twist. Season 8 is All-Stars, so that's its own thing. Season 9 is another men versus women, and then they have a twist in there where the two oldest people pick tribes at a tribe swap, right? Season 10, they do One World, baby version. Season 11, they bring back captains. Season 12, 4 tribes to start. Season 13, 20 people, 4 tribes of 5, divide them by race. Maybe that wasn't smart. That was season 13. Season 14, like I'm going through this and this is really ridiculous, but I'm just doing this for the first 20 seasons. Season 14, you're talking Survivor Fiji, 19 person start because Melissa McNulty quits and you get somebody picking the tribes and then getting sent over somewhere else. Season 15, it goes back to 2 tribes of 8, but you have that really bad swap, but you also have idols on both camps now. Right. And you have those different kinds of idols and what you can do with them. And you have the kidnapping that was happening. And then they get the clues. Season 16, fan versus favorites. Season 17, schoolyard pick to start. Plus, they do 2 different types of swaps. Season 18, token chains back to basics, but multiple people going to Exile Island. And then season number 19, which was Samoa, which is no swaps, no anything, but it's 20 people. We're just going to go through this game. It's just going to be idols. Jeff doesn't show up to some stuff. And then 20 is heroes, villains. Every season has its own unique identity. Every single one of them. And it wasn't just because of the location they were in. The location really didn't matter that much for most of them. Every season had its own identity. That is not the case with the 40s. That was three minutes of me doing that, by the way. I don't know why. Yeah, my bad.
I feel like that. First of all, for those who are listening and not watching, and you know this already, he wasn't looking at a single thing. He just did that off the top of his head. Very, very quickly. Very, I mean, if there's one thing, you could say a lot of things about Phil. No, I'm just kidding. one thing he
you did accidentally text me when you meant to text Ryan the one time. Yes, that was true.
Of course. he knows his, like, Phil is probably the person who second, no, probably more than even Ryan, because I think that Ryan probably knows the most that I know in my life about Survivor. He is so impressive. Phil's memory recall is so fast because he's just on it and he has names. It's insane. Like, it is like I've never seen before. In my day-to-day life, I'm probably the person, if Ryan's not there, I'm the person who knows the most about Survivor when I'm talking in any conversation. And then if Ryan gets there, it's him. And then when I talk to you, it's you. Like, your recall is incredible. Like, that was, I know he was just listing out seasons, but it was very impressive.
I mean, but it's like I grew up with it so much. And like those early seasons, I've watched them all like 3 or 4 times, even Thailand, Fiji. Like, I've watched them a lot. And that's not the case with the 40s, but like, it's hard to differentiate. It really is. It's just, it's different. And those early seasons, I think that was a testament to the way that they were producing it, that you knew it was a different season every time. Nicaragua even was old versus young right after that. Redemption Island. Like, it was, they were all very unique.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that when Survivor, obviously, unfortunately, and I'm going to get, you know, specific here, but unfortunately Survivor is obviously run by a corporation. Like, no, they're not making Survivor for the love of the game. Some people maybe are, but they're doing it because they can make money. That's the only reason why we get anything in this world, is how can we make money off of this? That is the world that we live in. And unfortunately, after COVID, not only, you know, do people realize, hey, it's cheaper if we, you know, do the work from home, or, you know, we can have kids not have snow days anymore because they can all, you know, have school. You know, we found out a lot of things, and Survivor found out that, oh, they can get away with a couple of things, and it saved them a lot of money. But I think the big thing here is I would rather have Survivor that saves money than no Survivor. Right. And I do think there's a world in which there's actually an interview. You've probably seen this, an interview that Jeff did back in the early 20s, where he basically spells out after a certain point what he felt like they would need to do to continue Survivor going. And it was buy an island, you know, do the same thing, like use the same challenges, use the same wood, like literally to save money. And he spells it out, you know, 10, 15 years ago about what, you know, they need to do in order to be able to continue this. But where I'm going with this is the skeleton of Survivor may not be able to change. They might not be able to leave Fiji. They might not be able to go down to 26 days. They might have to use the same challenges, or at least the same wood, over and over again. But there are simple things that you just described that they could do to make it different. Mm-hmm. Swaps. Why was it that we didn't get a swap, a real swap, until 44? And it was 44 was only one person going to each tribe. You know, why was it that we had the same mergatory every single season up until 49?
Yeah, I don't remember. Because again, that's where I can't even remember when we had the mergatory till and when we didn't, because it all just feels like it blends for me.
It's just it and having 18 people every single time, three tribes of six every single time. Like, I am resigned to the fact that there are some things that are not going to change. You know, people complain about wanting 39 days. I understand where that complaint is coming from, but I unfortunately my brain is living in this world where realistically we're not getting 39 days back ever, because Skydance owns Paramount, owns CBS, and they're all trying to make money. So that means it's coming out of our enjoyment of the show. But there are things that don't cost a cent that they didn't change for 10 years, for nine seasons, which always is very confusing to me, which is why I was so excited to see that it was two tribes, not two tribes 51 anymore, but 21 people is at least different. But with 21 people.
Tribes, I know, but I think it's two tribes of 10.
And then just one random person on the outs.
It's either going to be a Fiji start or a Palau start is what the rumor over on my brain
love.
Is.
We love that.
That's what I'm hoping.
Oh, Phil, Ryan has an idea for a podcast. I'll take this offline, but it's okay. He's like, we have to do this soon, because he thinks it might be a thing that other podcasts will do. But yeah, I think that, you know, and I am the New Era lover. I'm the one who loves New Era. I have to, and I've kind of just adopted this. This persona, even though I like it fine. I just like it more than I don't
hate it. When you start watching in 2018, everybody. I'm just saying, all of a sudden you love the New Era.
Of a sudden, nothing. It's just everyone hates it. And so I have to be like, well, I guess I'm going to be the defender. I guess I'm the person.
Here, let me say this though.
This is fine.
Let me say this. Season 43, which everybody hates, legitimately is a top 20 season for me. Like, legitimately, it's a top 20 season for me. I think 47 is great. I think 46 is great. I think 49 and 45 are close to great. It's really just because 41, 42, and 44 were so bad. And most people don't like 43. So those first four seasons get lumped in with 21 through 24 as terrible. And I think that's why people have just adopted New Era bad.
And also, I think that people hated 49 because we knew who was going on 50. And yeah. I think that a lot of people didn't like 49 because of that, because they were like, oh, well, we know that Savannah and Rizzo must succeed in some way. Even if you're not spoiled about the tribes, you know that they must at least go far, because why would they bring them back if they were, you know, first and second boot? Yeah. So like, that, you know, and I feel like that was a big thing. And then coming directly off of 48, I think didn't help 49. So I think, you know, it reinforces, but you know, how do you feel? A lot of these New Eras are going to age. Do you think that in 5 years, people will look back on New Era and still hate it as much as we do now? Or do you think that people will look at it like a San Juan del Sur and it, you know, kind of aged better?
I think 43 has the best chance to be a San Juan del Sur. I think the biggest problem is the winner of the season is Gabler. And I like Gabler a lot, but Gabler is obviously not the online community's cup of tea. He's an older white guy who's straight. Like, that's not going to hit for a lot of the online community. And I do think that, like, that is a problem with 43, because I think if you watch 43 throughout, I think that season is one of the most compelling week to week. But Gabler is never going to be somebody that, when he wasn't popular to start, the online community is suddenly going to build him up as like this amazing winner that we just didn't understand the first time. So I do feel like that sucks for 43. So that can't get there. I think that 46, 47, 49, and those will age really well. I think 45, it depends on the kind of survivor you like. I like that season. I think 49 will shoot up significantly for people though.
I agree. I totally agree. I think 49 is going to be considered really, really good. I will say, I think 43 on a rewatch is actually better, because I think that I actually kind of disagree. I felt like on a week to week, it felt too drawn out. Like 43 didn't feel... Like, obviously, the Jesse Cody of it all was great. Carla was great. Like, there were a lot of really great moments in 43. But it didn't feel like a hit for me. I think on a rewatch where you're binging it and you're watching it really quickly, you can see Gabler's arc way more clearly. And I think that people who have never seen it before, who didn't watch it live on a binge, will like 43 a lot more, because I think you're not drawing it out from week to week. I think some seasons benefit from week to week. I think other seasons, like I think 46 overall benefited from week to week. I think that 43 did not benefit from week to week.
Yeah, and people will not like this answer, but Worlds Apart is similar like that for me, where week to week, it's so ugly and brutal. But when you watch that as a binge, you're like, oh my God, these people are so ridiculous. And you're only spending a short amount of time, because you can watch 6 episodes in a day.
Yeah.
You're not spending a lot of time with these people. Instead of 3.5 months spent with these people, you're spending a shorter amount of time. So I feel like that one got a little bit better too. But I do hear what you're saying with 43. I think the biggest problem is though, 41, 42, 44 don't get better. I think 41 is starting to be ironically liked in the community. I think people are starting to be like, oh, 41 was actually so good and Erica was such an amazing winner. And I'm okay if you think Erica was a better winner than what the edit showed, because the edit didn't show anything. But I will forever just be like, the edit didn't show anything, so I can't really say anything with Erica. 41, 42, 44, I truly think are so poorly edited. They're really, really, really standard. The hourglass is awful. The do or die twist is awful. You don't have these like major heroes or major villains to cling on to. Shan was a great one, but Shan goes out so early. And after that, you're like, okay, offline loved Xander, online loved Ricard, maybe. I don't even know. People will now ironically love Heather and Erica, but like they just didn't, there's nothing there to cling on to. Same thing with 42. Marianne is a great winner. Amazing winner. Good. And I think she's super fun to watch. But like, does Jonathan help that season now that he played on 50? Where does Omer stand? Do we ever see Omer play again? If we see Omer play again, I think 42 could go up for people. But I think 42 felt like a more palatable 41 because we knew it was coming. But then when you think about 42, it's really not that good. And then 44 had the Tika 3, which was fun to watch first time. But 44 has nothing else going on. 44 is bad.
Yeah, I think I actually rewatched 41 relatively recently. And I actually liked it a lot more than I expected. And I actually know, so the winner was poorly edited for 41. But what I find very compelling with 41 is they played with storytelling and timelines. And like, you know, when they do the, you know, but you can have this fake, and then they do the flashback to moving the like idol around. Like I kind of loved that. Or when you see the two people say, when you see Xander and Shan say their thing, and then all of a sudden Nasir says it and we're like, what? I didn't know Nasir had this thing. Like, I feel like there were a lot of really fun moments like that 41 played with storytelling, because I think they were bored and they needed to find a way to tell this story. Now, did it serve Erica, the winner? Not really at all. But I don't necessarily even blame that on the edit. If they had a very clear Erica edit when they were winning challenge after challenge after challenge, everyone would know it would be Erica, because they're like, well, why are we hearing from these people who don't have anything to talk about? Like, you know, what is going on? I actually was very shocked and surprised about how much I liked 41 on a rewatch. And maybe I will also say I liked 41 more than other people because I was craving Survivor so much. And I felt like even though it wasn't good, I was just like happy to have it back. Like I felt like I was like dying of thirst in the desert and they gave me, you know, just like dirty water, and I was happy with that. And I go back to like just being so overjoyed to have Survivor on my screen again. But genuinely, on a rewatch, not as bad as I remembered. So that was a good surprise.
The thing for me is, because I am a Survivor purist at heart, doing the hourglass, doing the do or die, they just threw too much. They threw too much. Turning the merge, all that nonsense. Like, I just hated it. I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. The one person that couldn't win that season was the person who hit the hourglass, and they won that season. And to me, it was just like, this isn't Survivor anymore. And for me, it's like, I don't know, like a movie in a franchise. It's like, it might not be your least favorite, but it's set into motion everything that ruined the franchise. Like maybe Rogue One for Star Wars, right? It's like Rogue One set into motion why now Star Wars, the Mandalorian and Grogu is getting beaten by Obsession on a Tuesday, a week after it came out. It's crazy. And so it's like, but it's set into motion like what we don't want it to be. And that's what 41 was. 41 set the tone for the new era, which was a bad tone to set. And I hated all the decisions that they made from production level. And like, I agree with you, there was some fun storytelling. The Liana and Xander thing is amazing.
Oh, great.
But overall, like, I don't know. I don't think 41, again, I think 41 has a better chance of aging better on the online community than 43 does, because the winner fits more into what the online community wants, especially an under-edited woman. That's like, oh my God, that's a big deal for the online community. Natalie White is showing up in people's top 15s. I'm like, let's just chill, guys. But I think that, you know, Erica helps that season with the online community, but the offline community, if you went again and you stood in that line for Survivor 50 when we were waiting to go in and you asked every single person if they knew who Erica was, most of them would say no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I don't rank winners.
That's why we're doing it in 2 months.
I have so much respect for people who do that. It's so hard for me because I'm like such a different Boston Rob season, so different from Natalie season, which is so different from Natalie season, which is so different from, you know, I could go on. But it's so interesting that, you know, you've been able to cover so many different, you know, even in, you know, 20 seasons, so many different kind of eras of the show. And you've seen it firsthand. I have one last question for you. What are you most excited for in terms of the future of Survivor or the future of the specialists?
For the specialists, I'm excited for the fact that we got back to where we were during 40. Cause like I said earlier, like it was rough for a while, and like not getting the tell alls, obviously we won't hit our numbers like we were back then with the tell alls. I mean, you just can't do it, but it is one of those things where you've seen so many people pop up. And I think we kind of took for granted, more me than Alexa, in the late 30s. Like, we took for granted, like, oh, we're here, we've arrived. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't possibly lose it. And then 41, 42, 43, like, we watched our numbers kind of tank and we watched everything kind of fall apart. And we worked really hard to get this back to where we were for 50. I mean, you saw that, and you know what that was like, even only being here for like two seasons. Like, you know how much effort we're putting into making sure that we're putting out the best thing as well, and that we're always sticking with our opinions. So I'm excited going into 51. I feel like we're going in at even a higher high than we were from 40, because there's no come down. There's no COVID. There's no, oh God, what are we going to do in the fall? Like, we know what's happening. And I think we're going to ride that high, which I'm excited about. In terms of for the show, honestly, this might be a cop-out answer, but getting more returning player seasons is what I'm most excited for. I'm excited we're leaving the new era behind. The fact that we only have had one returning player season in 10 seasons is crazy. And like, I know we've only seen six in the history of the show. So like, if you average that out, it's what, once every eight seasons, once every seven seasons, but we were at least getting half returning player casts in there or something like that. I think waiting as long as they did, you almost turn Survivor into something different. Like, do you want to build up stars or do you not? Because when you see Ozzy and Suri come back and play a fifth time, it's because they're massive stars. You can't have that with any new era player now. And like, there's plenty of new era players that you could have made your stars, but like, will we ever see Jesse play again or Carolyn? I don't know, but I am excited that we're going to have more returning player seasons, because I think it's better for the show. It's better for us. And I think it is better for the fandom. Like, it gets the fandom just so much more engaged. I mean, like you mentioned it earlier, Survivor 50, like so many people are talking about Survivor 50. And even if they don't talk about 51, when 54 comes back around, it doesn't have to have the same magnitude of 50, but it's still going to be one of those things where it's, hey, returning players again. Let me check that out. I like Tiff. Tiff's back. Let me go see what she has in store. Hopefully not another jury appearance. Stay off the jury, Tiff.
Yes.
But well, she can go pre-merger. She can go to final.
No, she can win.
No more jury for Tiff. That's my one rule for the open era. But I'm just, you know, I actually am. When the open era got announced, I remember being in the room and you were there too. It wasn't this like, oh, wow. It was kind of like a, you got like murmurs going on.
Yeah.
Some people were excited. Some weren't. Like, what the hell is this? And I was negative about it initially, but then all of a sudden I started thinking, I'm like, no, this is them saying we are going to try to be different moving forward. And we are going to try being better. And we have heard what you've said. And that excites me for Survivor, because 41 felt like a reaction to a cultural moment. 51 feels like a reaction to a Survivor moment. And I think that's better for Survivor, because Survivor's always been in touch with the culture and it's always been in touch with, you know, what's happening in our world. But Survivor 41 felt like it didn't know if it wanted to fully commit to what it was saying that it was going to do. I think 51 is allowing them to kind of start over, figure out where they want to go, and make Survivor kind of about Survivor again. And I do think, you know, Jeff says all the time, we don't do these big physical challenges anymore, blah, blah, blah. Well, now that we're having two tribes, or if we do get two tribes, we're going to see some more physical challenges. And I think we will see villains. And I think there will be people that you love to hate. And I just think it's going to be a matter of how everybody reacts to it. So I'm excited for it. I know that like Will and I, we did a podcast talking about the open era and discussing the finale and everything like that. Both of us are pretty optimistic, which is not necessarily always where this podcast is at. I know, Tegwith, you're looking shocked. Why are you so surprised that we're optimistic?
Phil and Will are optimistic. Everyone stop the presses.
I know we are though. Like, I feel like the show is moving in the right direction. I really do. I feel like 50 was a wake up call of what the numbers can be from a viewership standpoint and what people truly want. Like, for as many people online complained about Coach, just as many people love Coach. Like, and you got to find those new era versions of Coach, because Coach is old. Colby's old. Stephanie's old. Ceri's old. Ozzy's actually not as old as I thought. But like, all of these people are getting old. Find your new versions of them. And I think it was a big wake up call for them of like, wow, we can turn this into stars, and we don't have to go traders level where every season is just players, players, players that we've already seen or the challenge. But I do think that there is some merit to like hitting the moment right now, which is, shows are stealing cast members from other shows, House of Villains, The Traitors, whatever reality, The Floor, like all of these shows are pulling people from other shows. Mm-hmm. You have your own pool to pull from. You have 751 people after the next two seasons. If they're both 21 people, we are going to have 793 people to pull from. Start pulling.
Start pulling. Absolutely. Well, Phil, this was so fun to kind of get to know you and your fandom a little bit more. Any last words for your listeners, your fans, about, you know, The Specialist, Survivor, your fandom, any or all of the above?
I mean, we are going to just keep on rolling. Like, that's, I don't know how else to say it, but like, we love it. And like, Alexa has been messaging me talking about how she's much more excited about the show and everything. And I know, Tegwith, you did your Surviving the Fandom with her, and like, we are all feeling like we're finally taking the steps in the right direction, which is nice. And a lot of that does come from the fans. And I say this all the time, like, Survivor is about the fans. You know, it ultimately, you need to make the fans happy. You should have the fans like having a say in certain things that are going on. Survivor is about the fans. We've always wanted to be the fan podcast for the fans who want to think about the show and the game in like a real way of like being critical. Not being afraid to say what we really think about the show when the show is doing something bad. I'd rather, you know, CBS and production be mad at me than the fans be like, Phil has sold out. Like, truly, like, I'm sorry. Now, granted, offer me $1 million and see if I feel differently about that. But that's really where I stand right now. And we really love the support we got through 50, because we got a lot of support. I mean, I think 25 of our episodes were in our top 100 episodes of all time on YouTube, which is crazy because we hadn't had any. I think there were three from the entire new era before this season. Now we have 25 from our Survivor 50 covers that get into our top 100, which is a big deal. Because did we hit the top 10? No, but like, we're getting back to where we were. And for as much as I will troll the trolls, and I will troll the commenters, and I will troll the spoiler people, and I'll go back at people who leave mean comments or leave controversial comments or whatever, I'm always willing to have the conversation and have the argument. When I say, yeah, but that doesn't make sense, it's really, that's just like how I kind of debate. You know what I mean? Like, I like to do that when I'm in person, when I can talk like this, I can be softer. When I'm typing, it comes out as matter of fact. If I don't put an LOL at the end, you don't know that I'm saying that with even a remote laugh in my voice. But I hear Gen Z doesn't like LOL, so I don't say LOL anymore. So the thing is, like, I'll go out that, but like, if you're calling us stupid morons, you're not being constructive, and I'm going to block you. I'm going to delete you. I don't really need you. It doesn't help us. I want this to be a more positive portion of the community. And that doesn't mean we're going to be talking positively all the time about the show, but I want it to be positive interactions. I hope that everybody understands where we're coming from, even if you don't agree with us. I don't want you to ever come to us and say, man, those guys are just being so nasty and so miserable. And like, why are we even listening? Like, yeah, we're going to be negative when we're down about it. When Devins and Ceri got double booted, we were miserable, and it was hard to pretend to be happy. But also, we don't want to be that place where it's just like troll fest and clickbait and whatever. And that's what we're going to keep doing. And it seems like we have found our niche, and that's all we can do. So, Tegwith, hopefully you stick around, and hopefully this podcast didn't make you be like, man, that Phil guy's actually an asshole. He talks way too much. You give him an hour and 20 minutes, he will never stop talking and let you speak. But I've enjoyed having you on here, and it's fun to get somebody who has so much more of a TikTok following come over here and kind of, you know, do your thing here in a different way than what we do, you know, just on the daily. So, yeah, no, it's good. Everything's moving in the right direction. And the misery I felt during 41, 42, and 43, I don't feel anymore. And I'm obsessed with this podcast. I mean, Tegwith will tell you, Will will tell you, Blake will tell you, John McKen, they will all tell you. This is what I think about. This is what I'm texting about all the time. You know, Will hates texting me because he knows we can talk about whatever basketball game, whatever baseball game, whatever football game is going on. It's going to come back to, hey, when can you do Co-Wrong? When can you do this next episode? Like, I just can't help myself because I love it. And I'm really proud of what we've built. And that's what's cool too. So hopefully we get a lot of good interviews and hopefully some of these 50 people show up on our podcast. Hopefully we get people like Rizzo and stuff and we just keep on going.
I think it's so fun to be able to, you know, have an outlet for this obsession that we all have. And, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, we have, you know, we found our people and I love that we're able to do it. So I'm just so thankful that I get to be a part of this community. And, you know, thank you for, you know, trucking when you didn't want to. You know, building what we've got here. But Phil, I know that this was a great way to kind of kick off the Survivor off season for Surviving the Fandom. For those who haven't listened to a Surviving the Fandom before, this is not a weekly podcast. This basically will come up when we've got a new juicy interview coming your way. So always keep an eye out for the next Surviving the Fandom. We've got some other things that are, you know, fun things cooking up for the off season. Do you want to tease anything, Phil?
I mean, we have so much going on. I mean, obviously your Survivor China rewatch starts on Monday. And for anybody who's listening to this later, June 1st, her Survivor Rewind starts. June 3rd, John and McKenna are starting a series where they discuss the first juror and how it impacts every winner. And they're doing that 5 seasons at a time. On Thursday, June 4th, Wes from Once Upon an Island and I are starting off our winning Survivor series, which will be 5 winners at a time going in order. So the first one will be Rich through Brian. And I think that could be a fun series for all these new fans who really haven't gone and watched those or don't really understand what was going on in society at that time and how these people were being revered, because I was there. I was young, but I remember it. And like, I was obsessed. And I remember even how they were viewed 10 seasons later. And like when Heroes versus Villains came around, it's like, oh, Brian Heidick. And Jeff's like, no, that guy's actually a bad person. We don't want him on. And I think Brian's actually done a pretty good job of like changing his appearance over the last couple of years. But yeah, so we'll be doing that on Thursdays. We're going to do a winner ranking the first 2 weeks of July. We'll do 25 in each of those episodes. Maybe a season ranking coming up. If you've been a patron, patreon.com/a specialist. You know, we've been going through the seasons in order for Every Season Matters, and we've been updating our season rankings as we do that. So I don't know if we want to do a season ranking now, but it's like after season 50, how can you not do a season ranking? So we'll see. But definitely a winner ranking coming your way sometime in July. And yeah, we're going to be putting out pretty much 3 episodes a week at least during this off season, which back, if you remember, before season 48, in like season between 46 and 47, we might've had like 1 episode a month. So we're back. We're ready. And we got a lot going on. Tay, do you have anything else going on? Don't sell yourself short. What else you have happening?
Well, I mean, it's mainly the Survivor China rewatch. I'm really, really excited about that. I'm planning on doing at least 3 seasons during the off season, maybe 2. I might be pushing it with 3, but 1 season a month looks like it's working out in my favor. So hopefully that. And then obviously every time Surviving the Fandom comes up, I've got a great one. And then I've got a little something else that I'm kind of cooking in the background. Still, I don't want to say anything. I think it'll be very, very fun. Not super Survivor heavy, but Survivor Light, that I think could be really fun, focused around Survivor players, but still kind of working on the logistics of that. So keep an eye out for that. And then over on my TikTok, it's just me rambling about random stuff. Off season is just completely random. So if you're here for random thoughts, you can go and check that out. But Phil, thank you again for talking to me about your fandom and everything about The Specialist. This has been a really, really fun one. And I know any super fan of The Specialist will absolutely love to listen to this podcast. But make sure to like and subscribe if you're not already. And I will see you next time when we're talking about how to survive this crazy fandom that is Survivor. Until then, bye.